Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
Like, let's give him all the reps in training camp, get him as ready as possible. Can't you just throw your, when you have a child, can't you just throw them into the pool? And then they inherently know how to swim. Isn't that a thing?
Sports Talk Saturday.
What you're describing sounds like child abuse.
On WGR.
I think what ends up happening is Joe probably threw Louie in the pool as a child watched him suffer. And was like, don't worry, Mom, he'll learn how to swim. And, you know.
Sports Radio 550.
What is the point I'm trying to make there even? I don't even... Something about reps in training camp, and suddenly that turned. Derek made that open.
He did.
He certainly cut out something in between me saying reps in training camp and throwing my brother in the pool as a child, which I don't remember happening, but I don't know that it didn't happen. This is Joe DiBiase, Sports Talk Saturday, here for the next couple hours. Nate Geary will actually be along from OTB for a special Sports Talk Saturday at 2 o'clock. He'll be on from 2 to 5, so you got me for the next 3 hours, and you'll have Nate for 3 hours after. So lots of local coverage here on WGR Sports Radio 550 today. Talk a little bit about the Sabres. We'll have Brian Koziol along at 11:30. A little bit of golf as well. Tiger Woods set the PGA record, or tied the PGA record. So we'll talk a little golf with Brian, but mostly Sabres. Then we'll talk some Bills with Chris Trapasso at 1 o'clock from CBS Sports. I actually, amazingly though, and if you ever listen to my shows, this will come as a big surprise to you. I'm going to start off today's show talking about baseball. At least a little bit. Kyle just did a double take, and in part, it's because Kyle is here.
The headphones are back on. I'm here.
Yeah, the headphones were off, and now they're back on. In part, it is because you are here, because you are a Nationals fan. And they won the World Series, and I actually watched a pretty good chunk of that series. Like, I watched pretty much all of Game 7, a lot of the first couple games. Didn't see a lot of Game 4 and 5. But for the I would say I watched more of this World Series than any World Series before. And
it's ironic because the late game ratings for this series were the lowest they've ever been, and that's even with your help.
Do you think that's even with me watching? Do you think that's in part though because it's Nationals? It's got to be because it's Nationals and Astros, right? Like or is it just the sport at this point? Like
it's probably a little bit of both.
If the Yankees are in that World Series instead of the Astros, it's probably getting pretty good ratings. So let me ask you this: as a Nationals fan, I want your unbiased opinion here because I'm still. I've never been a baseball fan. I've been trying to get into it a little bit more this year. Am I right in thinking that the Astros won, but over the course of that seven-game stretch, I thought the Astros or the Nationals won. I think the Astros were a better team.
They were definitely a better team on paper, but you look back, May 24th is the magic date this season for the Nationals. They had that 19-31 start. Everyone wrote them off at 12 games under 500 heading into June.
Okay.
May 24th until, it's escaping me now. It was game 5 or 6 of the series. You go May 24th until October, insert date here, maybe the 27th.
Best
the Nationals and Astros had the same exact record.
All right.
In different ways.
And they, but even in the series, like game 7, how many did Houston leave on base? Like 10?
They were at 10 around the 6th or 7th. Yeah. They were threatening all night. Max Scherzer threw 100 pitches to get through 5.
Yeah. I thought it was cool, though. I was rooting for the Nationals. I thought the storyline's more interesting for them. They hadn't won a World Series since the 20s, right, with the Washington Senators. Then Walter Johnson. Like, when I saw that name, like, I might not be a baseball fan, but I know who Walter Johnson is. I'm like, that is ancient to me. And then you've got the storyline of Bryce Harper leaving. And then, pretty funny on social media, everybody's tweeting out the video of him saying he wants to bring a title to D.C., but he wants to do it with the Phillies. And then the next year, the Nationals win. So that was pretty cool. I like that. But then, I got taken aback, actually, by Rob Ray yesterday. When he was on with Shope and the Bulldog, he's in D.C. because the Sabres played the Capitals. And I think he mentioned this on the telecast, too. But he mentioned with Shope and the Bulldog that he was walking around D.C. all day, and it's like you would never know they won the World Series.
Just kind of sad.
Right.
It's very sad to hear.
Like, I was rooting for the Nationals in part because of their fans, because I felt like a little connection. Like, I'm a Buffalo sports fan. I think Buffalo sports fans, if anybody, can understand when a star player leaves and feeling good for that fan base when you win anyway, when the guy leaves and then you win. But I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't go completely on Rob's word here, but it doesn't sound like it's a rabid scene over there. Like he said, he saw a couple of jerseys and a couple of flags, but that's about it. So at least I got Kyle here, though. That's going to
We'll see what the turnout's like today.
At the parade?
The parade is in 3 hours. 2 o'clock.
Man. Did you have any thought of going to this parade? It's a far away. It's a far distance.
I had thoughts of like, maybe I'll go on a whim to one of the games in D.C.
Any serious thoughts?
None that got out of the station.
I think you maybe dodged a bullet. Maybe. I don't know what the scene of this parade is going to be like. I've told this story before, but I went to the Cleveland Cavaliers championship parade after they won, after they beat the Golden State Warriors. And just some highlights from the day. You drive three and a half hours to Cleveland. You get 45 minutes outside the city, and people are already parking. 45-minute drive outside the city. People are parking their cars. And it was tough to get a parking spot 45 minutes outside of the city. That happened, although Uber existed at that point, but it was kind of new. So I think we took advantage of that. It only took us like 20 to 40 minutes, however long it would normally take once we parked. So that was crazy. The city probably had people were saying they were trying to squeeze double the population into one city. I don't know if that was an exaggeration or not. Probably was. But all of these people, like 700,000, I think was the number, in a park that was designed to hold 30,000. Just packing people into this park. Never saw the Cavaliers. Never saw a bus. Never saw a float. Never saw the trophy. Never saw LeBron. Nothing. Never saw any of it. And I actually got separated from my group for about 2-3 hours. And because there were so many people in the city, you didn't have any cell coverage because, I don't know, maybe the towers were like overused or something. So I was lost in Cleveland for 2.5-3 hours. So that was my experience at a championship parade.
Is getting lost for 2 to 3 hours at a championship basketball parade the adult equivalent of losing your mom in the shopping mart?
100%. But probably worse.
Is there anywhere you could go to, like, hold up a balloon?
No,
like,
right.
Somebody find
me? Where are you supposed to go? Like, it's chaos everywhere around you. There's people running through the streets with their shirts off, and, like, there's no traffic or anything. I don't know. I managed, at least. So, all right, so no serious thoughts on going all the way to D.C. for the Nationals parade. That's all right. We'll see. That's today, right? The parade's today?
Yep, 2 o'clock. The more serious thoughts was the Birds going back to Philly. Didn't do that either because I was here when that...
Right.
When that happened, still in Buffalo.
That's a closer drive, but how much closer? Not a whole lot.
Philadelphia's
5-6 hours. Gotcha. All right, little baseball there for you off the top of the show. But by the way, quickly, before I launch into Bills here, because I might never stop if that happens, do you know what I listened to on the way here?
I do
guesses?
Not.
I listened to Christmas music on the way here.
But okay.
I don't know if I enjoyed it. It was just on because it was on. I didn't know they start this early. Maybe every year we do this, we're like, they're starting Christmas music this early, and maybe it feels like they're getting earlier and earlier, but maybe this is normal. The day after October, like, there's still Halloween candy in here. Paul brought some in yesterday. Great combination, by the way, of Heath and Milk Duds. Definitely Heath over Milk Duds, but a good combo. Halloween candy's still out, and there's Christmas music right down the hall from here at Star 102.5. So there you go. Christmas music's on. So I thought that was interesting, too. I do want to talk a lot about the Bills today. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll do a little Sabres, like I mentioned, with Brian Koziel in about 20 minutes. But mostly Bills. They got the Redskins tomorrow here in Buffalo, the last game of a 3-game homestand. And I've been thinking a lot about them this week in terms of how it's another game that we're expecting them to win. And that's a weird feeling. Like, that does not normally happen. Grew up during the drought, those games were rare that you had, hey, you're showing up to this game, like, you better win this game. You better win this game. You should win this game. Hey, you're favored by 10. That's just something that doesn't normally happen here in the last 20 years. And that in part speaks to how far this team, I think, has come, even though they have not come all the way. They need to really be a bona fide playoff team. They need to be a legitimate good team, not just, hey, we can beat up on the bad teams. Because that's what I think they are right now, and that's all they have proven that they are right now. They're good enough that when you get a team like the Dolphins in here, you get a team like the Redskins in here, you should win that game. You should win that game. But what they've yet to do, I think, is achieve a level of consistency and achieve a level of competitiveness that would make me think that, hey, when a team like Baltimore comes in here later in the year, do they really deserve to be favored in that game right here, right now? Because my thought would be no. My thought would be the Bills do not deserve to be favored against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens at home. I think that could be a pick'em. I think maybe the Ravens would only be favored by one or two. But my guess right here, right now, would be they're not favored in that game. And that, of course, can change a lot depending on what happens in the next couple of weeks. The Ravens have New England on Sunday Night Football this week, so that'll be interesting. But what are we thinking about with this team right now? Do they deserve that 10-point line? Do they deserve to be thought of as an automatic win? Like, when we're going through the schedule, John Clayton was on earlier this week on the station, and John is not was never optimistic about this Bills season. He was not high on the team. He's not high on Josh Allen. But there he is. He's on the show, open the Bulldog Thursday, and he's saying, oh, yeah, this team will get to 11 wins. Yeah, this team will get to 11 wins because of their schedule, for the most part, and because their defense is good enough. Or, I'm sorry, their defense is really good. I think you could still say their defense is really good. They've really only had one bad game all year, which was last week. So, I'm not taking too much away from them just because the Eagles put up a bunch of points on them. It was one game. The offense is good enough. That's what I should have said. The offense is good enough. So, John's got them at 11 wins pretty easily. And I could see how you get to that. The Redskins should be a gimme. The Dolphins should be a gimme. The Broncos should be a gimme, especially if Brandon Allen's playing quarterback. Maybe it's second-round rookie Drew Lock by that point. They got some guy named Brett Rippon on their team, too. Like, that's one of those three quarterbacks is going to be playing probably their first NFL start against the Bills on Week 12. Or maybe not their actual first NFL start, but one of their first. Then you've got, I mean, the Steelers aren't a gimme, but it's Mason Rudolph at quarterback. That's a fourth win that you probably should have. Then you've got the Jets, who are a tire fire even with Darnold right now. That's five. And that's 10 right there. And I didn't even mention Cleveland, who can't get out of their own way. They're 2-4, 2-5. Coaching staff doesn't seem to know what they're doing with Freddie Kitchens. That's a sixth. That is 11 wins. That's six games they should win. That's 11. And I'm assuming in that scenario that you lose to Baltimore, that you lose to Dallas, and that you lose at Foxborough, which should be the biggest assumption of those three. So, have the Bills earned the right for us to assume they're getting to 10 or 11 wins? Because that seems to be the likelihood. I have been assuming it. I have been. Because I think they're good enough that when you get a team like Washington this week, and then you get a team like Miami in 2 weeks, and a team like Cleveland next week, who those three teams have a combined three wins, and you have five, then have they earned that? Or are we just going through and they're just going to play these crappy teams all year, and this is how they're going to get in? Because what I'm worried about then is, and I shouldn't say worried about, because if they make the playoffs, awesome. To some extent, I don't care about how they make it. Because 2 years ago, they made it, and I didn't think they were a very good team. I didn't. A good team doesn't let anyone in the NFL run 30 times in a row on them successfully, like the Saints did. They came in here and stomped the Bills. So, they were okay. I thought they were okay that year. I didn't think they were a legitimate good team. I'm not even sure the Bills thought that they were going to be a legitimate good team. Because there was a lot of leftovers. That was a leftovers team. Tyrod was still here. McCoy was still here. Eric Wood. Kyle Williams, Jerry Hughes, like the core of the team was still the Whaley guys, the Rex guys. But they made it. Credit to them. They made it. They went 9-7. They figured out a way to win. And I think they should deserve some credit for that. And in part, I think when we're trying to determine the long-term successful or how successful long-term this regime is going to be, you have to take into account to some extent, the fact that they made it with a team like that. They were able to get 9 wins. Even the fact that they were able to get 6 wins last year. Because when I look at that team last year, especially on offense, that team was not designed to win football games. It was not. You're starting Nathan Peterman in week 1. You've got Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes as your starting wide receivers. You still got Charles Clay hanging around. Like, that team was not designed. Your offensive line looked like what it was. You were not designed to win football games. But they still won 6, which... it's not good, but it's not like Miami this year. It's not like Washington this year. There's a lot of teams this year that are going to lose a lot less than 6 games. The Jets might probably won't get to 6, but they did that. So they deserve a little bit of credit for that too. And then this year, I've yet to determine if they're legitimately good. I think they're okay. I think that they are good, but not great. That's where I'm at. I still think they could become a great team at some point this year, but Josh Allen's going to have to play a lot better than he has so far this year for that to happen. So, how much stock should we take this season into when we're trying to determine, is this the right head coach? Is this the right general manager? Is this the right quarterback? On the long term, how much stock are we supposed to take into this year? Because if they go through the whole season, they can very well, like John Clayton thinks, they could very well win 11 games and beat nobody this season. They could... What's their combined record against teams that they beat right now? The Jets have 1 win. The Giants, I think, have 2. The Bengals haven't won. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I think that's right. The Titans are their best win, and they're 500. That's 6. Dolphins haven't won. Is that it? 6 combined wins of the teams the Bills have beat? Like, that is... like, how much credit am I really supposed to give them for this start? Because what are we trying to be? Are we trying to be a team that, like, they're kind of winning, not completely, because I do think Allen has, it was funny, someone tweeted out about Tyrod Taylor yesterday, and I actually want to ask a question about that, or get into that a little bit too. Someone tweeted out, what the Bills would be 7-0 if Tyrod was their quarterback right now, and they probably were joking, but I thought about it, and I'm like, that's probably not right, but it made me think. It feels like they're winning right now with the recipe, or the recipe we wanted them to win with Tyrod Taylor. Now, we don't want that for Josh Allen. We want something better for Josh Allen. We want something higher than that. So I get that. The expectation is different. But the way they're winning with Josh Allen right now is very similar to how I think we wanted them to win with Tyrod. It didn't ultimately come to that because Tyrod wasn't willing to throw a lot of the passes Josh Allen's willing to throw, and they were a lot more run-oriented back then, and their defense wasn't as good when Rex was there. But like that's what they were trying to be. They were trying to be 200 to 250 passing yards a game, a really good run attack, and one of the best defenses in football. Like that's what they were trying to be. And this year, it's working, but it's working with the guy that they spent a first-round pick plus, you know, all what it took to trade up to get that first-round pick at 7 overall. So that's really where I'm at right now. I'm still left wondering, not really what's going to happen this year, because I'm still, even though I asked the question, like, do they deserve the right for us to assume that they're going to beat Washington and beat Denver and beat Cleveland and beat all these bad teams? I do. I think they've reached that bar. But the bar they have not hit for me is this sustainable? Because the Chicago comparable scares the crap out of me right now. Because that is the team the Bills have been, I mean, just they've been a spitting image of Chicago and how they built their team up. They drafted a quarterback early who struggled a lot in his rookie year. Trubisky probably struggled more than Allen, but struggled a lot in his rookie year. Had a step forward in year number 2. had a great defense in year number two. The Bears were the best defense in football last season. The Bills might not be the best defense in football because I think the Patriots have to be considered that right now. They might be the best defense ever. But they're right there. They're close. They're close to the top of the league in defense. And like Chicago did, they went out for their young quarterback's second season, and they added some B guys. They didn't add any A-plus weapons, although the Bills did try. They tried to get Antonio Brown, but they didn't try an A.J. Green. We'll get on that in a little bit, too. They didn't try an Odell Beckham either. But they did try to get Antonio Brown. So they tried, but what did they ultimately get here? B players. John Brown. Probably not a number one receiver in the league, but a really good number two. And actually, to be fair, he is doing a pretty good job as a number one so far this year. But he's not an elite wide receiver. So, like a B guy. Cole Beasley. Probably one of the better slot receivers in football. But a B guy. Devin Singletary, third round pick. Frank Gore. Tyler Croft. These are all pretty good players. They're not amazing. That's what the Bears did too. Allen Robinson. Taylor Gabriel. Drafted Anthony Miller in the second round. Drafted David Montgomery in the third. Signed Trey Burton away from Philly. None of those guys are amazing, but they're pretty good. So there's another similarity between the Bills and the Bears. And look what's happened with the Bears this year. They went from 12-4 last season. Very similar year to what the Bills are having right now. Like a big step up. Everyone's going, all right, hey, maybe the Bears have a quarterback. Maybe the Bears could be good for a really long time here. Because I think we were left wondering that with the Bills. But look at the Bears 1 year later. Just because your quarterback took a step in year two, just because your team took a step in your young quarterback's second year, does not mean that it's automatically going to keep getting better and better and better. You hope it does, but it's not an automatic. This could be it for Josh Allen in terms of this is how good he is. That's a possibility. Maybe it might not be likely, but it's a possibility to me. And I'm not just going to assume that he's going to get a lot better. I think there are signs that make you think that he could, but man, like, I look at Trubisky this year and think, that guy was pretty good this year, or last year. We were all talking about in the offseason, like, would you take Trubisky's second year? And I think a lot of fans said yes to that. And then fast forward 6 months, and Trubisky stinks, and his coach is getting asked about whether he's going to continue to start over Chase Daniel. Who the hell is Chase Daniel? They were chanting his name. The Bears fans were chanting Chase Daniel's name at one point this season. That's how quickly it can turn. And my overall point for this segment, I guess, is I'm not yet sold on this quarterback and this team for the long term. But what I am sold on them is that they're going to make the playoffs this year. I think they are that good. I think they're good enough to where they, when they play bad teams like they're going to tomorrow, they're going to win those games. 803-0550 is the phone number. Took a couple calls. We're going to get to some hockey in the next segment. We'll revisit this conversation later as well. Some trade deadline stuff, too, that I want to get into. So if you got any thoughts on the trade deadline before I get into it, feel free at 803-0550. Let's start off with Jerry and Kenmore. Jerry, you're on Sports Talk Saturday. What's up?
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
But I am really disappointed. My understanding is from your screener that since he really had no interest in moving A.J. Green, but I saw this as a bigger opportunity and not just adding to the team. This is a guy we would have interest in the offseason. So you'd have a perfect chance to give an 8-game tryout to see if he likes it here and if he fits with us. It just...
Well, why not just sign him in the offseason rather than pay what Cincinnati reportedly was getting offers of a first-round pick. So, like, is a first-round pick worth an 8-game tryout?
I think it is. I think the number of times that you can make the playoffs in any league and you don't give your team an opportunity to win.
But
I understand the process, okay? But are we going to have a weak schedule now?
Well, Jerry, it's not even about the process for me. It's about how much does A.J. Green actually increase your odds of making the playoffs? Because I already think they're pretty damn high.
But I think it might increase your chance of winning a playoff game. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I hate the way this team is coached in general. You know, the whole take care of the ball thing is great if you take care. You know, think of every quarterback in the league that's been told to take care of the ball and what they've turned out to be. He doesn't make plays anymore because I think he's terrified to turn over the ball. And, by the way, I know it was an inopportune time to turn it over last week. The turnovers were 1-1, and we got the tar kicked out of us. So please don't tell me how important it is, okay? Do you know that John Wooden, the greatest coach of all time, talks about how It's way more important to undercoach players than to overcoach them, because when you overcoach them, you take away their initiative, their creativity. You know, I think he has this kid thinking, and this can't be a position you think at.
Well, yeah, Jerry, thanks for the call, man. Like, I understand your point there, but at the same time, then I think of guys like Jameis Winston, who seemingly has been undercoached throughout his entire career, and the turnover issue has never gotten better for him, and it's going to get him ousted in Tampa. Like, this is it for him, probably. This is the final year of that experiment in Tampa Bay. So I don't completely disagree with you. I don't think they should be overcoaching him, but it was a too high a level. The turnovers were at too high a level. They needed to come down at least a little bit. And I do think he's still taking chances. Not as many, but I don't think they've completely taken the creativity away from him. 803-0550 is the phone number. We will revisit this conversation in a little bit, but we're going to talk some hockey next and a little bit of golf, too, with Brian Kozio, who will join me next here on WGR.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is Darlene now dancing down to the dot. Pass across looking for Skinner. Just missed. 4-on-1 the other way. Capitals bring it up the ice. This is Leipzig. Sends the pass across. Backhand. In the back of the net. Stevenson. 2-0 Capitals.
You know, a lot of times, a little peek behind the curtain here. And I'm with me producing for Show Up in the Bulldog, I do this too. Like, when you play a clip, usually you'll whisper in the host's ear, like, who it is or what it is. And just Kyle just whispers in my ear, this was brutal. And, like, it's just it's so true. 4-on-1, and was it 1-0? That was the second goal, right?
This made it 2-0. 2-0, and it turned into literally a 4-on-0 once Ristolainen hit the ice.
By the time I turned the game on, I knew I was going to miss like the first 10 minutes of the game, 10, 15 minutes of the game. I think it was 3-0 by the time I turned it on. And the moment I turned it on, there was the fourth goal. So that game got away from the Sabres quick. So we're going to talk a little hockey here. Also a little golf, too. We'll sprinkle that in along the way as well. Brian Koziel joins me now on the West Her Hotline. Brian, how's your Saturday morning going here?
Going well. How are you guys?
We are good. Yeah, that game was that was rough last night.
Yeah, that 4-on-1 play was probably the worst of the four. I mean, that was four goals in in a 4:27 span. And incredibly, all the players that you'd think would be involved in torching the Sabres, none of them were. Alex Ovechkin was essentially a non-factor all night. He didn't have to be. We didn't see anything from Backstrom. We didn't see anything from John Carlson, who's leading the league defensively in points.
Yep.
It wasn't the normal crew. It wasn't the Washington power play that sometimes destroys the Sabres.
Right.
It was just very, very poor decision-making and bad defense, and Linus Allmark had no chance on virtually anything the whole night.
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't John Carlson either, who's on pace for like 150 points on the season. I don't even think I'm exaggerating there. I think like that's actually what he's on pace for early on here. I want to ask you about Dahlin, because he... Again, a couple of turnovers last night, and I'm seeing more and more on social media some criticism of him, but I do think it's fair in his own end. Like, what's been your impression on his game last night in the recent stretch here?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been good. I mean, it lacks consistency. There's no doubt about it. he still, of course, is capable at any moment of making a play that can lead to a goal. There's no doubt about it. He still has tremendous talent. But his inability to sometimes, I think, handle the puck properly, sometimes I feel like sometimes it's just a physical bad luck sort of thing with him. We've seen him a few times just fumble it in a bad spot, and all of a sudden it ends up in the back of the net, or it ends up leading to a really good scoring chance for the opposition. So I want to say maybe part of it is just he's had some just some. I know the puck luck thing is this thing that I don't love to throw out there because I feel like sometimes that's self-created.
Sure.
And I think he's created some of that too. There's no doubt about it. He's still 19. I still keep telling myself he's still 19. He's still 19. Paul and I, while we were watching the game last night, Paul Hamilton and I are in the studio watching, and you know we're talking about Dahlin. Like, geez, because social media is pounding Dahlin. It seems as though every night now that seems to be the fashionable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think taking him out of the lineup solves something. I know some people would want to say, well, sitting him down and gives him a chance to reassess. I mean, I don't know. I still think he's too talented to do that.
I know.
I think Ralph Krueger is, so far, we think, the right coach for this in the fact that he is not going to all of a sudden just punish Dahlin. I think he's going to handle him the right way. I like to hope to think that he's going to handle him the right way. I don't think that means sitting him out. I think if Brandon Montour does go tonight, which we're thinking he might, I think Gilmore is the one that comes out. I know fans want to say, sit Dahlin down before the Sweden trip. I don't see it happening. I mean, if Jack Eichel has three horrendous games in a row, you're not going to scratch Jack Eichel.
Sure.
I don't want to compare the two at their stages of career at this moment, but I just think Dahlin's too talented of a player. But, yeah, he definitely has not been good handling the puck, and they've been getting the goalies and the defensive and putting in some bad odd man rushes because of him. So hopefully Ralph Krueger, especially now, you've still got almost another week coming off here before they play their games in Sweden again. He'll have an opportunity to maybe sit down one-on-one and really address some of these things so that he can make some better decisions.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Montour because I'm very interested to see what happens when he comes back and if the Sabres do get near complete health on the blue line, because I think that he is going to make it interesting for me on a couple of levels. One, who gets scratched when everybody's healthy, or when at least there's only a couple of guys hurt. Like right now, it would just be Bogosian and Scandella. And I know you mentioned Gilmore, but I thought Gilmore and Miller might have been their best pair last night. So maybe that put a little pressure on Krueger to either just keep the status quo with the lineup on the blue line or take somebody else out, but I don't know who that would be. And then there's the thought of ice time. And I know that we've been screaming for years to get Ristolainen below like 24, 25 minutes that he's always been playing. And that happened a little bit last year once Montour came in. And I'm wondering, you kind of already answered the question. I think you think Gilmore is going to come out if Montour plays. But I'm wondering if you think that Ristolainen's big minutes to start the year will change if Montour stays healthy here and gets back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it automatically would, because Montour himself is a guy that I think should be logging pretty good healthy minutes. And I don't think me saying taking Gilmore out of the lineup is a shot at him in any way. I agree
right.
with you. I actually think he's been pretty good. I've noticed him almost never in his own end, which is a good thing defensively.
Yep.
And his speed, you can't help but not notice it. He's creating opportunities on the other end. His passing is pretty good, too. I mean, I remember in preseason thinking, well, this guy can pass the puck. That's good. That's been a weakness for some of the Sabres' defense. Now it seems maybe like the defensive core, at the very least, is shifting toward a group that maybe that can actually be a check in their column, that, hey, they're a good or a better passing group than what
yep.
we've seen in years. Gilmore has done nothing to warrant coming out. I just think they think at this moment right now his ceiling is probably the lowest. So I guess that would be the guy. I don't want Joki Haru to come out, and there's nothing to do with the fact that he scored last night. I think when he and Scandella were together, and I'm shocked to say this because I was probably right at the top of the list of trade Marco Scandella, get rid of him in the offseason, I think those two have been their most effective pair in terms of making the least amount of mistakes, not necessarily providing offense, but boy, I almost rarely this year have seen the two of them do something extremely costly that would end up in the Sabre net. So
right.
those two back together when Scandella is healthy, I feel like I want to see that. But now Montour is there. So you already have to, that's not even counting Gilmore. Now, if Montour is there, now one of those guys probably is out, and then you know, you mentioned Bogosian at some point, but that's probably very, very long term. We don't have to worry about that. And we might even see, you know, a trade, or who knows, we might even get to the trade deadline before we start thinking about Zach Bogosian playing again. So he's probably off the discussion radar, but when they are all healthy, it's going to be interesting, and it's a good problem to have. I think I even heard you the other day on your show saying about it. When everybody's healthy, we now know Yoki Haru can be a regular NHL defense, and we didn't really 100% know that coming into the year. Yep. We were hoping. Gilmore, we know, can play. Lawrence Pilot is now back and healthy and playing well in Rochester to start. We know Casey Nelson can play if needed, and he's a guy that's kind of hot and cold. There were stretches last year where we thought he was the Sabres' best defenseman.
Right.
And then there were stretches where, like, oh, geez, this is why this guy maybe never got a shot to get more of an opportunity. So they're so deep, and it always leads back to the same discussion that we had all offseason, is there a move to be made? But we keep hearing Sabres brass talk about energy management and the schedule and the Sweden trip and how grueling it is, and sports science and how we're going to sit guys in and sit guys out, and maybe that's just what they're going to do. But the numbers would say a move is to be made, and to help offensively, and everybody points to who's going to play the to replace Vladimir Zabok on the second line. That seems to be the popular answer.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Nelson, because I used him as an example for that. It's like, you look at, they already have two injured defensemen. For him, who, yeah, like, I think he could be like a, like, what is he ideally? Like a seventh defenseman in the NHL? Like, he's at least capable of that, I think. Or even like a bottom pair guy. And you already got two defensemen injured, and he's like three injuries away maybe from getting in the lineup. Like, they keep calling up Borgen, I know, for salary cap reasons. He could be in front of him. Pilot. You've got Montour that's going to be coming back in. So you've got an NHL defenseman in Rochester that's three more injuries away from maybe even needing to play. One guy I want to ask you about, though, real quickly, how you are kind of already mentioned him too, and I don't want to spend the whole time on the blue line, but Yoki Haru, the one thing that worries me about how they're using him is how little of ice time he's getting. Like, he's always last on the team in on the blue line. He actually averages the least amount on the blue line with 16 minutes, 35 seconds a night. He's yet to play 18 minutes a night in a single game this year. My worry is that because Kruger doesn't use him as much as the other guys, that if everybody does get healthy, and because it's the rookie and it's the young guy, that's a lot of times the easier guy to scratch or send down, but I hope that wouldn't happen. Are you worried at all that Yoki Haru would be the guy that they scratch?
I think when you bring up that minutes point, it does worry me. I think we've seen Kruger handle these younger guys with a little more, I guess, care. Remember the game, was it Montreal? It was a game where, remember, Darlene didn't play like the last 9 minutes?
Yes.
And he said, look, right now his experience in terms of playing in these tight situations where, you know, one mistake can change the game, we don't want him out there at this point, or that he's going to, you know, he needs more experience than that. So I'm wondering if what he said there about Darlene is also kind of a way of how he's handling Yoki Haru, in the sense that, you know, we're not going to push him too hard right now because he's handling 16 minutes, so let's not push it, because if he does 20, maybe there's something in there that'll go wrong. I wouldn't mind at some point giving him a shot to play a little more just to see if he can handle it. So far, it seems like he's handled every test pretty well, so I really have very little negative to say about him, which is great, because that trade so far, to me, when that trade was made and the excitement about maybe what it could bring, I mean, it's hitting fruition here a lot faster than maybe I thought it would come.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Brian, let's talk a little golf here before you get out of here. Tiger gets to 82 wins. You've got the President's Cup coming up, and there's a little bit of a question about whether he's going to pick himself. But first, on him getting to 82 wins, and was there any doubt for you? Like, when was there any more? What's the question I want here? Did you have more doubt that he would get to the to win another major than get to the 82 wins, I guess?
Initially, before a few years ago, before we really thought maybe that health and his back would sideline him forever, the 82 seemed like more of a slam dunk than the 18 Masters, or the 18 Majors, I'm sorry, Jack Nicklaus's record. So that record we always thought he would shatter. I mean, to think that he's hit 82. And, I mean, Snead didn't hit it until the 50s, until his age, he was in the 50s. He's played in more tournaments. Tiger's in it in so many less tournaments. It just shows how dominant he's been. To think, I mean, Tiger almost lost, I mean, a decade might be a stretch, but, I mean, he won his last major in 08, and then he wins this major here in 2019. I mean, there's probably a solid 5 to 6 years in there where he just, as we know, because we watched it, just could not get healthy, just could not get his game back. It was the combination of both. And to think, if he had just maybe not had those injuries, maybe, of course, partially, maybe not had some of his off-the-course issues, if he just continued to play at the level that he was, I mean, my goodness, he'd be well over 100 probably
yeah.
in tournament victories. He probably is in the 20s now in terms of majors. I mean, he went 11 years without winning a major for a guy that just continued to win. All this does for me, every time he wins, especially at his age now with all the surgeries that he's gone through and all the things that he's gone through, it makes me appreciate his records more and more, because when I watch who I consider now to be the top-level players, and Tiger's playing like that right now, whether it's, yep. you know, Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, these guys that are Justin Rose, even McIlroy's having a great year. McIlroy's actually winning right now, a chance to win in the World Golf Event this week.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, like, what their career feats are, and then you compare it to, like, oh, here's what Tiger was at the same age, or here's what Tiger right. was at through the same number of tournaments. And, I mean, it's just not even
Yeah, comparable. It's not even close.
Yeah, it's like the Gretzky hockey records.
Yeah.
Like, they're just...
McIlroy yeah. said that he was asked about the 82 wins. He's like, I'll never even come close to that. And, like, that's one of the good young golfers of, like, he's still young. But, that's one of the good young golfers in the sport right now. And he's just like, yeah, I have no chance in the world of getting to 82 wins.
Yeah, and, I mean, Phil Mickelson, we know, who's probably throughout Tiger's career been the second most dominant golfer or the second most well-known and watched golfer. Mm-hmm. And his career wins in the 40s.
Right.
I mean... these players right now, the fields are so good and they're so deep because of Tiger. All these guys now are the ones that watched Tiger when he was in his prime. You know, they were all fueled and motivated to be the next Tiger Woods. If these guys get 30 career wins, that'll probably be an incredible accomplishment, and obviously nowhere near to Tiger's record, which it just shows just how good he was. And seeing him play like he did last week, he was such in control of all facets of his game. It was a tight course in Japan, the course that they played last week. A lot of big names. I know people might say, oh, what's this tournament, Japan? He won. There was a lot of big names in the tournament, and it was the first time the PGA Tour had come back for what now a regular tour stop in Japan. So they got a lot of big names there. So it was a legit win, and it was a tight course, and he was great off the tee. He was perfect with his irons and distance. His putting, he was making putts all over the place like the old Tiger. It was really, really cool to see, and as we know, golf right now is so good with how deep it is, but when Tiger's involved, it just goes to a whole nother level.
Do you think he golfs at the President's Cup?
I think he does, as long as he's healthy. And I don't think he's planning on playing much more in between. He is a captain. It would be the first time that a captain would actually pick themselves to play.
Yes. Yep.
Which would be.
How do we feel about that, by the way? Like Tiger seems like he would be the guy to be the first to do that.
I think. He's probably the only one that would have the resume to be able to do it, where no one would be like, dude, what are you doing? You can't pick yourself. But I think all the golfers would understand, be like, yeah, you should pick yourself. You're playing great right now. You're in the top six in the world. Like, you should pick yourself the way he's playing right now. So, and of course, not that sports would ever be persuaded by, the organization that runs the event or the television. But you know, this is on NBC. This is not just hiding on some little. This is on NBC. You know, the PGA of America is running this event. Like, they, I'm sure, are going to be pushing Tiger to watch this, because the President's Cup, it's kind of a fun event in the off season here. But if he's playing in it, suddenly the eyeballs are going to be times 10, and you know, obviously that brings in more viewers and more money. So I'm sure they'll be excited. The players that he could pick from, the captain's choices: mm-hmm. Fowler, Finau, Woodland. Kisner, Nah, there's some players right now that are playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you could name four very easily that he could pick to play the international team, but I don't see – the only way I see Tiger not picking himself is if he doesn't think he's healthy. Right now his game is there, and I think he would have the players backing for him to pick himself. It would be a weird scenario to pick yourself, but I think it'll happen.
All right. All right, Brian, thanks. We look forward to hearing from you in pregame tonight.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks. There's Brian Koziel on the Wester Hotline talking some hockey and a little bit of golf there as well. I got a quick thought on the Sabres that actually stems from a conversation I had with Tom Gazzola from ESPN or from TSN Radio in Edmonton. I had a conversation with him on my podcast this past week, and an old name that we haven't really brought up in trade conversations. Like, we used to talk about him a lot, and I don't think I've heard his name in months. There might be reason to throw him back in the mix. I'll tell you who that is right after the break here on Sports Talk Saturday with Joe DiBiase on WGR.
Yeah, I mean, that's I think you could say that's kind of my style of game, and you know, I like to play that up-tempo, you know, style play with looks like what we're doing. So hopefully I can translate that and, you know, make this team better.
Sabres defenseman Brandon Montour. I'm very excited to see him back in the lineup. Hopefully that will be tonight. Sabres and Islanders tonight. Pregame starts at 6 o'clock. Brian Koziel will be along. We just had him on the Wester Hotline. We talked some hockey, some golf too, but also a lot on the blue line. Actually, almost entirely on the blue line, which is really where I think most of the intrigue lies with this team currently, is just the sheer number of NHL defensemen that they have. I think I said it last segment that there would need to be five defensemen, six defensemen, an entire blue line's worth, entire lineup's worth of injuries to get to a Casey Nelson, who is an NHL defenseman to me. Like, I think he deserves to be in the NHL. I don't need him to be up here right now, obviously, but that's how deep they are. Five injuries, six injuries. There is a name, though, when we talk about Sabres and trading defensemen for forwards, that was kind of the first name we thought of when we were trading, when we were all trading Ristolainen in our minds. So I'm going to throw the name back out there. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Now, he's kind of backed off from that as an idea. I think we kind of, fans have realized and media have realized that Ristolainen's not getting you Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Fair. Value's not there. And I also thought, by reading some in Edmonton, that he was not getting traded. But on the I do the Locked On NHL podcast on Fridays with Tom Gazzola from TSN Radio in Edmonton, beat reporter for the Oilers, also does Locked On Oilers, and I asked him about Nugent-Hopkins and like what Edmonton's appetite might still be to go out and get a defenseman, because it seems like whenever there's a defenseman available, Edmonton is always the team that's mentioned as a team that could do that. And I asked him about that, and he told me don't just assume Nugent-Hopkins is not getting traded. Edmonton's got a money problem. They've got a money problem. Nugent-Hopkins is up for an extension after next season. So he's got 2 years left, including this year, at $6 million. He's 26 years old. Then he hits unrestricted free agency. And when I spoke to Tom Gazzola about that, he made it seem like it is not a slam dunk they sign him at all. They might not have the money to do it. And then I looked at Edmonton's cap, and I kind of see why. Now, they will have about $20 million in cap space for... That's not a lot, but $20 million in cap space after next year. But here's the thing. They only have one defenseman under contract at that point. They'll have to sign Darnell Nurse. They'll have to sign four other defensemen. They'll only have four forwards under contract. So they're going to have to make almost an entire roster out of $23 million. So that means someone that gets paid a lot is probably either going to be out the door or get traded. And he seems to think that's going to be Nugent-Hopkins. So maybe that's a name we shouldn't completely forget about. It would probably take more than Ristolainen, maybe like Ristolainen and a pick, or Ristolainen and a really good prospect, something like that. Maybe a Connor Sherry. I don't know what it would take. But I'm starting to think about him a little bit again, not just Winnipeg, who's pretty much been the only team that we ever think about when we're thinking about trading a defenseman. We'll get back into football in the second hour here at Sports Talk Saturday with Joe DiBiase, Chris Cherpasso from CBS Sports, coming up in an hour here on WGR. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
For a Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.